Moving on to our next episode, The Long Twilight Struggle.
The war between the Narn and the Centauri reaches its peak.
All right. I feel like there might have been a couple of other things you've mentioned in your...
Yeah, might have been.
Might have been.
I like the way the episode starts. Londo walks in on Reefa, lovingly stroking the Centauri throne.
Yeah, that was a little weird. I made a note later on down the line that Reefa is just disgusting. Like, the character of Reefa is just this disgusting piece of sentient life.
Okay.
I don't care for him at all.
Well, you're not supposed to, so well done.
I do have a heart somewhere. Okay. The planet is ready to talk to Sheridan.
Epsilon 3.
Drawl comes and presents himself to him. Now, I have to ask, is this the same actor?
No.
Okay, I thought he looked a little different. And I know they kind of played it off as, I feel 30 years younger. Like, okay, but you still don't look like the same guy.
Here, let me actually read from the J. Michael Straczynski book on this. Because this one's always bugged me. Because the next time we see Drawl, it's back to the first guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I was like, what the heck is going on there? This episode features one of the few appearances by Drawl, which requires I explain that it was not planned that there would be so few appearances. The actor we cast in the role, after already making one change in the cast, so we had the first Drawl, he's no longer available. So they cast a new guy. The new guy does this one episode, and I think he does actually one later. I think there's one other one now that I think about it. Gets a role, a plum role, in a Broadway revival of Hello, Dolly, and therefore was consistently unavailable. So I finally bit the proverbial bullet and let go of the character, as annoying as that was. I spent enough time explaining the change in Drawl's appearance in this episode, I really didn't ever want to bother doing that again. It was a bitter disappointment, to be honest, about the whole thing, because I had some interesting plans for Drawl in Epsilon 3. But between bringing in Sheridan, losing Talia, restoring Leta, terraforming Delenn, and a number of other changes that were in the works, there were only so many balls that I could balance at this point. I had to let something go. And while the Drawl storyline would have been interesting and a great deal of fun, my primary concern had to be with our main characters in Babylon 5 itself.
Okay. So we are going to see Drawl a few more times.
Yes.
And apparently we're going to bring back the original Drawl.
I think we bring him back at least once. I believe it's the original Drawl in The War Without End, Parts 1 and 2.
Did they explain how he gets older?
No. No, there's no attempt made to reconcile it.
Man, that's rough. That is really rough.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Centauri the Narn are planning to attack the Centauri supply line, which apparently amounts to this planet where they either grow all the food or they store all of the food.
It's a key piece in the supply line, and if they break that link, the whole line will fall apart.
Okay. And at the same time, the Centauri are planning to attack the Narn homeworld because they seem to know about this plan.
Yep.
And Jakar kind of figures things out. Too late. You know, he can't get them to pull back and not go and make this attack. And it ends up failing. The Shadow show up.
Yeah.
They completely wipe out.
I thought it was interesting that for a little while there, it looked like maybe the Narn were going to hold their own in that fight.
Yeah, they were certainly... They weren't just rolling over right away.
Right.
And it was clear that they were about to get away until the Shadow come out of nowhere.
Man.
With a weapon that can destroy a jump point.
Yeah.
That's got to be pretty big.
I'm glad you were blown away by that, too, because that is a huge deal.
Yeah, it didn't seem to me like, you know, this is just a simple warp bubble that we're creating with, you know, a starship, that this is like some massive tear in space that, you know, we're opening up, and they're shutting it with a huge piece of energy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the Centauri end up using the mass drivers mm-hmm. to destroy the Narn homeworld. So I get what a, you know, excuse me, a big massive chunk of rock is going to do, you know, hurled at a planet. I get that. I do. But what's the difference with using a mass driver versus a really big missile? Or a really big energy blast that, you know, can decimate, you know, huge areas.
Nothing. I think the point is that there have been, and we get the answer in this episode, there have been treaties signed by major mm-hmm. races to say, we are not going to use world-devastating level weaponry in our fights.
So we'll do it piecemeal, a little bit at a time?
We will fight in missiles? Space, and whoever controls the space around the planet controls the planet. And strategic strikes on military targets. Mm. But you're not going to do things that will completely decimate the surface of the planet to the point that it becomes uninhabitable or wipes out civilian populations.
I don't see the point of any of that, especially if whoever holds those treaties doesn't somehow then enforce, you know, whatever punishment should go along with it.
Yes, it's clear that Earth should have stepped up and had more of an issue with the Centauri.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't personally see the big deal with the mass drivers. I really don't. I just see them as an extra powerful missile.
Yeah.
It's more natural, as far as I can tell. But
it will destroy the entire planet's ecosystem. There's no...
So will a really, really big nuclear weapon.
I agree. But we also don't use those, you know?
I got to imagine that the weaponry that they have in 2259 has got to be at least as big as something along the scale of a nuclear weapon. Some sort of atom bomb that...
What I'm saying is it seems clear that it's the class of weaponry, not the particular, the mass driver, that's the problem.
Yeah, I really don't see the...
It's the planetary scale of attack that's an issue.
Hmm. Okay, so at any rate, the Narn are basically subdued, subjugated under the Centauri rule.
Unconditional surrender.
Yes. And Jakar, before it, you know, everything happens, he goes and asks for sanctuary. And it is granted.
Yeah.
So now, the Centauri, while he can't represent the Narn anymore,
in official capacity,
he's not going to be kicked off of Babylon 5. They can't touch him.
As long as he stays on Babylon 5.
Okay. Let's see here. Oh, he becomes now Citizen Jakar.
Yeah.
Does he carry that title for a while?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah, they refer to him that now and again throughout the series. This is where we get the conversation. They're down on the planet, and Sheridan asks Delenn, "Are you sure we're going the right way?" And she says, "Abso-fraggin-lutely, damn it!" He kind of looks at her, and she says, "Oh, I've been studying your method of communication. Do you approve?" And he says, "We'll talk about that later."
And basically, they get down there, and Drawl basically pledges to become an ally to whatever is going on
Babylon 5.
Babylon 5, Sheridan's side, essentially. Yes. Basically saying, my planet is at your disposal. You know, he clearly trusts Sheridan enough to be able to say, you are someone who can be trusted, and I'll allow you to use, you know, whatever this thing is inside this planet.
Yeah. I like that he has a line in there where he says, "You've shown considerable patience, more than I would have shown under similar circumstances."
Yeah, agreed completely on that. I like that somebody used the line, "There is hope." Because it seems like, you know, this is a pretty bleak episode with the destruction of, you know, the Narn and, you know, their being overtaken by the Centauri. To then have it end with the ray of hope that is supposed to be there in, you know, the introduction of the Army of Light with all of the Rangers and how they pledge their loyalty to Sheridan and say, "We will follow what you say."
Yep.
That's a great thing.
And Sheridan.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really get from this episode that they were saying it was Delenn. It was, "We pledge our loyalty to you, Sheridan."
They already had pledged their loyalty to Delenn in the past.
Sure, but I don't think that we've ever seen that.
No, we haven't. Not on camera. Definitely. I'm just saying, I think it's important for later in the series to point out that Delenn and Sheridan are on equal footing as far as the Rangers' dedication goes.
Okay, I agree with you on that, but just, we don't know that at this point. At least from this episode, we don't know that. Because everything that I heard them saying was, "We pledge, you know, the Rangers pledge their loyalty to you."
Okay.
Which is a powerful thing to get.
Yeah.
You know, "Hi, we're a strong army, and we'll do whatever you say." that's tough. To be able to use that appropriately.
There are so many good scenes in this episode. I don't really know how to do them credit. Just listing some of them, I think, at least, you know, acknowledges them. So the first one for me that is just drives home emotional feeling for me is Londo on the ship watching the Narn homeworld be flattened. And as each mass driver weapon fires, you see his face get a little more pained. And you can just see him shutting down emotionally. He's saying, I can't allow myself to feel, because this is too gruesome what I've allowed to happen here.
I have absolutely no sympathy whatsoever for him.
Well,
I just think you are a despicable piece of living existence.
Okay.
That through your actions, whether while at the beginning unknown to you, unbeknownst to you, you have fully understood what these people are that you have gotten in bed with, and you've done nothing about it, and you've allowed it to happen. And no, don't feel sorry for you at all. No.
I do. I feel pity for Londo. The next one is when Jakar has to go beg Sanctuary from Sheridan. Katsulas does an amazing job of portraying the abject humility that Jakar is feeling in that scene. You know, he is a prideful, prideful man, but he has to do this for the good of his entire race. He has to go in and eat his own pride whole in front of Sheridan and beg for Sanctuary.
I don't feel like he had to beg. I feel like he asked.
I think he feels like he's begging.
I don't know. I don't see that scene going any other direction other than Sheridan saying, "Yes, I grant you Sanctuary." I really don't.
Okay.
I think it's Sheridan feels for Jakar.
Yes.
I think he likes Jakar, and I think he's going to do whatever he can to help Jakar.
I agree with all of that, but I'm just saying, from Jakar's point of view, I don't think the foregone conclusion is as obvious as...
The emotion, the expression that I see on his face is, "We're defeated. We're destroyed, and I have to get help from somebody other than the Narn. I have to now rely on somebody else."
I see a very personal level of shame. And
wow, I don't read shame at all. No shame.
The next one is the instantaneous change in the relationship between Garibaldi and Londo. When Londo comes back on the ship, and we see, I mean, you can tell the change now in Londo. The thing that happened to him in orbit over Narn, you immediately begin to see its effects as He's shut down all emotion, compassion. There's nothing left. He's just this hard engine of Centauri will. I really like that scene. The council meeting where he kicks Jakar off the council, says, here, just telling everybody, here's the terms that we have required. You know, the death of any Centauri is going to be met with the death of 500 Narn. All these just really onerous terms. And then we get a little bit of a hint of a cough from Londo. That becomes important. He starts coughing when he's delivering this stuff. That is important foreshadowing. There is Londo's reaction as he listens to the news. The Centauri Republic today announced plans to annex several smaller worlds adjacent to Narn space, declaring them protectorates of the Republic. Hmm. Next really awesome scene. And they just keep coming. Moment after moment. I think this is some of the strongest television. For me, this is some of my favorite television of all time. The conversation between Jakar and Sheridan. Last time I offered someone my hand, we were at war 24 hours later.
That scene didn't do much for me, though.
Oh, really?
Okay. It was a little melodramatic.
Okay.
And especially, he says that, and then he gets up a second later and shakes his hand.
He's just saying, this is not an easy thing for me to do. I'm doing it because I know it's the right thing for my people. But you have to understand, this is hard for me. And then, as you mentioned, the scene at the end, where we find out about the Greater Army of Light, the size of the Army of Rangers is finally starting to come into scope. We find out that, Kosh is in the room as well, and she says, all the people in this room are here to pledge themselves to you. I've always wondered, is Kosh on board with that?
Maybe.
But, and then fading the episode on, we will hold the line no matter the cost. Just brilliant stuff.
I like it. I just don't know that it's brilliant. When I walk away from that particular scene with the Rangers, it's nice, it's moving, it's telling, it's a powerful scene, but I just don't see it as like this overarching like triumphal moment.
Okay.
I do see it as, I think it was Drawl who had said, there is hope, or I can't remember, somebody said there is hope. It's not just this, horrible waste and everything's just going to fall apart. There is hope, and here is the hope that's going to come. And I don't feel like I walked away with any sort of scope of how large the Ranger Corps was. I just felt like, here's the ones that are on the station right now.
That's to me the telling, though, of how big the body must be. If there's ones who are currently stationed on Babylon 5,
there's no guarantee of that. There's no guarantee that just because there are this many aboard something that, is 5 miles long and, big as it is, that means that there is a requisite percentage out in other places of space.
Okay.
It just means that there's at least this many here on the station.
Okay.
At least this many.
And just an interesting aside really briefly, in the script books, J. Michael Straczynski talks in this episode commentary about whenever Andreas and Peter, Jakar and Londo, were doing a scene together, didn't matter how busy he was with script writing or other things, he always made time to go see the first take of a scene between Londo and Jakar. And it turned out that, for 3 or 4 years, I forget what he said, how long he said it was, but for several years into that, Andreas Katsoulis and Peter Jurassic thought, Straczynski just does not care for the way we're doing these roles. He doesn't trust us. Every time we're on stage, no matter how busy he is, he's coming over here, and he's got to be telling the director to, you know, to dial us back or something. We don't know why. And so Peter Jurassic went to Jim Michael and he said, you got to tell me what's going on. Why are you always there when we're shooting? And J. Michael Straczynski said, because that's what inspires me to go back and write. You know, the interaction between your two characters, the way you guys play off each other, is just so good. I love it, and it reinvigorates me. And so he says, of course, the flip side of that is that anytime I didn't make time for him after that, then they got worried. What are we doing wrong now? You didn't show up for the last one.
Oh, good heavens. That's sad. All right.
Hey, listener comments, Pete?
All right. We'll finish off here starting with listener money bags.
We'll finish off starting with, okay.
Mm-hmm. A great episode, although the draw plot dragged it down a bit.
Oh.
It was a bit slow, and I don't recall ordering a large ham.
I like this Drawl. I think he's funny.
He does look like a big ham, though. And he was kind of pink in nature, so I'm with...
He's probably referring to the way he holds forth on his sentences. I enjoyed it. I got a laugh out of it.
The guy who plays Drawl all but chews the scenery. I don't like it. One thing to note, is this the first episode we learn Zathras is related to yes. Epsilon 3 somehow?
Yep.
I think it is. The scene where he is mentioned is a throwaway scene, but I think this is an important revelation. In Babylon Squared, Epsilon 3 isn't mentioned, since it takes place before A Voice in the Wilderness, which doesn't mention Zathras, something I remarked in when that episode was covered. The Narn Centauri...
A comment we edited out, by the way.
Oh, did we? Yeah, okay. Yeah, probably. The Narn Centauri plot is classic. Jakar's speech at the end is amazing. Londo drives me nuts in this episode. One moment, he's horrified at the use of mass drivers. The other, he is smugly addressing the council. Perhaps he's thinking that the ends justify the means. I don't know. Or maybe he's just convinced himself that it was necessary. I would have liked a bit more exploration of that. As to the final scene with the Rangers, Kosh was there. Is this the first indication we've seen that he's involved in the Great War somehow? Sheridan says that B5 will help. I'm not sure. I'm just sure he meant to say Earth will help instead. Probably just a slip up. I'm sure it's not significant. Isn't it a little weird for Sheridan to have joint command of the Rangers? Shouldn't there be an Earth Force regulation somewhere that says he can't command foreign troops? Come to think of it, I think this did happen a lot in World War II. But in this case, the Mimbarian humans aren't even officially allied against the Shadows. True, Sheridan is already having second thoughts about his government, but... Well, I'll need to watch In the Shadow of Zaha Doom and think about this a bit more.
Okay.
I'm going to comment on that. I suppose there could be a regulation, but Earth doesn't know that these people exist.
Yeah.
So, I think it's okay.
It's no different than any of the other stuff that Sheridan's cell is doing.
Right, good point. He finishes by saying, TV7... Sci-Fi 6, and until next time to you, listener moneybags.
You know, just really quickly, he said that, you know, we didn't hear about Zathras and his connection to Epsilon 3 earlier. He actually got the episodes backwards. We were introduced to Epsilon 3 in A Voice in the Wilderness, Parts 1 and 2, and then we meet Babylon 4 and Babylon Square. But we are never told that there's a relationship between the two. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, Bob says, this episode was just excellent. War, deception, and the Rangers. I really question Londo here. Does he really feel he is doing his duty here? To me, he looks extremely uncomfortable and is hiding behind the line, it is what it is. it doesn't sit well with me. I have really grown to love Jakar. He could well be my favorite character. He is humble, passionate, eloquent, and full of passion. He makes the Klingons look primitive. I guess that's not too difficult to do. I think Andreas Katsalas really does a brilliant job, especially when he has to go and ask for sanctuary. You can see the last shred of his pride melting away. Drawl is back, and he seems very shifty to me. I'm not fully sure of his motives and the role he has to play. To me, it seems that, like JMS thought, hey, they are orbiting a planet. I must use it somehow. That is meant to be said in a very camp voice, if you can manage it.
I don't think you did.
No? All right.
I think we noted it earlier, but Drawl and Epsilon 3 were supposed to be a very major part of the story, but he had to drop it because they were constantly shifting who's playing Drawl.
Jeez. Man, seems like so many things are really important. We gotta cut it.
He had a lot of ideas that, didn't pay out. Oh, by the way, we didn't talk about this. I read volume 15 of the series, script book series now, and it has the original 5-year arc. I don't know when we want to cover this, because there is stuff that happens. Maybe we do it in the series wrap-up?
Yeah, series wrap-up, I think.
It was very, very interesting for me.
Save it. Save it, Joey. Yeah. Save it.
I'll just say that it's interesting that we have access to it.
Okay. All right. Bob finishes off. Just on a tangent, the name Lord Reefa conjures the image of a man with dreadlocks and a roll-up and speaks with a Jamaican accent. It really could just be a bad dream, though. This gets a 5 for sci-fi and an 8 for television. Have a great week. Okay. Listener SpongeBob, she says, I like Drawl. I like the Narn Centauri storyline and the ensuing battle. A very good, strong episode. 8.5. Have a good week. SpongeBob. And we really need to find a way to get this family back together again, Joey. I don't know what it is you've done to divide them, so...
I'm okay with hearing two different points of view. We are a culture of... What's the term I'm looking for? I can't think of it now. It's something that Martin Sheen, President Bartlett says in The West Wing when he talks about, the many voices contributing... and how it makes us stronger, or something like that. I can't remember the exact line, though.
Schizophrenia?
Oh, wait.
No, not what you're going for.
I don't think that's the same thing.
Okay.
Because he had MS, not schizophrenia.
Yeah, that's true. He did. Okay, well, Bob, SpongeBob, I tried to get you two back together again, but Joey wanted nothing to do with it. JD. He says, the long Twilight struggle was fascinating. Good lord, this is great television. I liked Londo as a character before this. Yeah, he could be a... I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm not saying that, JD. He could be a bad person, but he was likable. But he was a likable annoyance. Like that friend everyone has that drives you nuts... But are still enjoyable company, Joey. But now he's a low-life a-hole. We saw it on his face when the other Centauri military leader was trying to rally him to their despicable cause, when he was telling Londo the plan. Hesitation. He was clearly not sure what to say, he was obviously having second thoughts about what the right thing to do was. But he went along with the slaughter plans anyway. And then it made it even worse when he was shown on the bridge of the warship watching the destruction. Yeah, he was grimacing. It's not like he looked to be enjoying it, but he might as well have been. And then after they're done pacifying the Narn homeworld, they turn around and make the most infuriating laws to keep them down. The murder of one Centauri citizen will result in the execution of 500 Narn. Oh my gosh, that's horrifying. The look of pain and loss and anguish on Jakar's face is palpable. He needs a big hug. I can't wait to see if the Narn can successfully rise up against this madness. I can't wait to see Jakar rejoin the council when he can. I can't wait to see more of that Minbari teacher who lives in that computer and has offered an alliance to Tron and Delenn's blessing.
I just thought, how much more interesting would JD find it if they had cast as Drawl the guy who plays the data priest in Tron?
Yeah, that would have been funny. I hope we see a lot more of that character. And I really can't wait to see how this army of light surrounded Captain Tron will proceed in their stand against the mess Londo's caused. This show suddenly took a dark turn, and I'm hooked for good on Babylon 5.
Nice.
Amazing. Oh, and one more thing. Is there a bit of romantic spark between Delenn and Scarecrow? I may be reading too much into the looks that they seem to be giving each other, but it seems as though maybe there's something amorous happening there. I'd sure support it.
Before you go on to the intern, Bob had asked, is this the first time that we've gotten a hint that Kosh is involved in the Army of Light? I'd say no. The first real strong indication we got of that was in the Shadow of Zahadum, when Delenn and Kosh told Sheridan, all right, here's what happened to the Icarus.
Right, okay. Aaron says, while Joey said that I'm not a true Babylon 5 fan for not having a lot to say about this episode, it's because I just enjoy watching it so much that I don't think up stuff to say about it. Though I enjoy messing with him, telling him that I don't think too highly of it. Good on you, Aaron. Well done. He says, sci-fi 9, TV 10.
Okay.
All right, Joey, I think you start us off with sci-fi rating.
Well, I know, Pete, you're going to probably be shocked and horrified, but these are my ratings, and this is how I feel about this episode. For science fiction, this gets a 10. This is probably in my list of top 10 things on television ever. I'd put it up there against Darmok. I'd put it against Noelle. And I feel like it holds its own in that category. Specifically for science fiction, withdrawal in Epsilon 3, the whole thing with planetary bombardment, the huge space battle between the Narn and the Shadows, the closing of a jump gate as a weapon, absolutely brilliant. Your enemy is trying to flee, and you collapse space around them and destroy them with it. And Londo and Jakar's interaction with each other. Just brilliant, brilliant stuff.
I agree that it is fantastic. I really enjoyed this episode watching it. Unfortunately, I can't give it a 10.
Okay.
I was close to giving it a 9. I'm sticking with an 8, and I feel comfortable with that because, for the most part, you're right on with all the things that you mentioned about. All of the Narn Centauri war stuff, the Army of Light. The only downside is, yeah, we get Drawl back, and the planet's apparently going to play a little role in, you know, what's going to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
But the Drawl scenes really pull this down.
Okay.
I like him, and I enjoy the character and what it does with the general plot, because I think that, again, a planet that is made up of a machine in the very core of it, God, that is amazing. But this guy who plays Drawl really tears it down.
I enjoy that aspect of it, but I get that it's not for everyone.
It doesn't help it rise to the level of a 10 for me.
Okay. For a television, I'm going to give it a 9. I mentioned that list of scenes. I honestly wish that I had the vocabulary to really express how much I love those scenes. Each and every one of them, the passion, the emotion that I feel when I watch them, that those characters are able, the actors are able to deliver through the screen, it is absolutely astounding to me. I'm giving it a 9.
Okay. Without any hesitation, I think that this is some of the better television stuff that we've seen in Babylon 5 thus far. I think the plot's there. I think production is there, even with the CGI stuff. I think it's actually come along to a point that I look at it and I don't automatically, you know, shake my head and say, oh my gosh, what did they do here? I think that they've figured out that stuff. I think that, unfortunately, Drawl gets in the way again.
Okay.
And it becomes too cheesy. And so I am going to give this a 7, but I think this is really, really good. If Drawl were better, I think I could be right up
if
there.
If there were the other Drawl?
Yeah. Well, somebody other than this, what I'm going to call manic Drawl. You know what I mean? He just seemed like just mean. Like, it was coming out at you like, I took a look at you in the shower. it just seemed a little too goofy to me. And given a better actor or maybe a director who could help rein that in a little bit more, I think the rest of the elements are there to give it a really high rating like that.
Okay.
What about for the P5?
A 9.79.